This is a Hog Sports Network podcast.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. The postseason is here. Well, sort of. It's SEC Tournament Week, and that's why we're doing this podcast early. Bubba's got to get down to Hoover for the SEC Tournament, where the Razorbacks will begin play on Wednesday. We'll talk all about that, and also about the series in Aggieland over the weekend. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Kendall King, where it's all about teamwork. Building brands around a design concept, Kendall King takes pride in their skill sets in displays and signing, as well as dot-com photography, content creation, and influencer marketing. The bases are loaded, and the Kendall King team is bringing it home. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Kendall King, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball, featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's your host, Matt Jones.
Welcome into our downtown Fayetteville studio with Bubba Carpenter. I'm Matt Jones. Feels like I was just here, Bubba, because last Wednesday when we did the podcast, and by the way, we'll be back on our normal schedule next week, Wednesday. Like I said, we're doing this a little bit differently because of the tournament. Last Wednesday, I was here, and I did exactly what you're about to do. I left here, I went and jumped in the car, and I drove for what felt like forever down to College Station, Texas, and I got back Sunday, and now here we are. It feels like it was here, car, back here.
It was worth it, though, wasn't it?
It was a fun experience. It's probably the best college baseball atmosphere I've ever experienced. And I love Baum Stadium, and I've been, you know, to some others. But the proactiveness of the A&M crowd, the way they are on the players from the time – I mean, it's – just to give you an idea, let's say Gabe Gackel takes the mound. Okay, the PA announcer says, now pitching for Arkansas, Gabe Gackel. Not a split second. Everybody, Gabe. And then it's just, they're saying Gabe's name over and over and over. And they probably say it 100 times during the course of an inning. And they're just, and it's a fun, it's like a fun ragging. Like we were talking how, you know, they did you when you were there 35 years ago. You know, like I think at a lot of SEC West ballparks, it's a nasty, you know, when they get on the, say, like the parents of players or on the players, it can be real nasty. There, it's kind of fun. Like, to give you an idea, the at Bluebell, the parents section is right next to the student section. And so in order for the parents to get to their seats, they've got to walk in front of the students. Well, here's how this went was, you know, the students, instead of, you know, being nasty or something, you know, they go, hey, you know, whoever's dad, give us the horns down. You know, and they turn around, they give the horns down, and, you know, they start chanting, one of us, one of us. And so it's just kind of a fun, it's a fun deal, and I really enjoyed being down there. We could talk for an hour about the experience in College Station, but it was a great trip.
Yeah, I knew you'd like it. It's well, you asked me about way back in the day in that series we had there. I don't remember a lot about the game. I remember the atmosphere. I remember standing on deck, looking around, just taking it all in, and I mean, it was crazy, but it was fun. You know, it can get obnoxious a little bit. I'll tell you, the only thing I did not like is when Cooper Dawson got hurt, came off the mound, they went with ball five to the next hitter. You got to have a clue. Razorback fans, Baum Walker fans would have known, hey, this dude just got hurt. Let's don't start with ball five.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's me being me, I guess, but I didn't like that.
Yeah. Let's talk about the A&M series. Arkansas goes 1-2 down in College Station. I don't know how much you can really take away from the third game down there because at that point they've won the West and they're not playing that like a normal game three. They did play a lot of the same starting position players. And I think that was probably because, you know, take the first game against A&M away and, you know, they're having some success offensively over the last 8 or 9 games. And so they wanted to see, you know, I think it was more than anything, just wanting to keep those guys in rhythm, you know, try to get them some more at-bats against quality pitching. But from a pitching standpoint, they did not approach Game 3 anywhere near like what they would have approached it, you know, in a normal time. I think they wanted to win the series, but like Dave Van Horn said at the end of the game, and I thought it was a great quote, he said, sometimes you have to lose a game to win a game, which meant that sometimes you have to just say, okay, we're just going to eat it today in order to win a game somewhere down the road.
Y'all explain that to Bob later. He had a hard time. I listened to the post game. I think Bob. I don't know if Bob heard Dave or if he just didn't understand what Dave meant by that. But I think we all understood what he was trying to say. And, you know, you just let that one go and you start getting ready for Hoover. Once it got to a certain point, you know, I was hoping Will McIntyre would have a better start. You know, I know he was probably dying to get the ball after Thursday night's game. You know, I felt bad for him there, but I was hoping he'd have a better start. But look, that's a tough lineup. You make a mistake to that lineup, they're going to hurt you.
And on Saturday, it was different than the first two games of the series. First two games of the series, the wind is blowing in from the north, which never happens this time of year down there. But I swear to God, we had a tropical storm come through before the game on Thursday. And by the way, Blake, can you pull this video up? This is from Ryan Broninger. This is what it looked like inside Bluebell Park about 3 hours before the first pitch at 8:30. I have never seen rain like this. You know, so the local news there said that they got 3.34 inches of rain that afternoon. So somewhere between about 2 o'clock and 5:30. The A&M field manager actually told someone I know that they got 5.82 inches of rain over about that 3 hour span.
Wow.
It was incredible, incredible hard rain that they had there. And when I got to the ballpark on Thursday afternoon, it looked like a lake out on the center field warning track. And so the job that the A&M grounds crew did to even make that field playable that night, I thought was incredible, incredible job by them. But tough conditions, I think, Thursday with the rain delay. It's hard, I think, sitting around, especially when you're the away team.
Yeah, it's always harder when you're on the road. I thought it might help us a little bit because I thought it might calm down the A&M crowd. I thought maybe some of the crazies might leave early, but I don't think that happened. I think the normal people left. I think the crazy people stayed.
A lot of people stayed.
And it was still a hostile environment. But it was funny, you know, that what you just pulled up right there, one of my pitching guys, Cade Pagnon, showed it to me. And I'm like, look, they moved the game back to 8:30. They're planning on playing. And he's like, there's no way. And he pulled a picture up and showed me the field where the lake was out in center field. Yeah. I'm like, there's no way we're going to play this thing.
Great job by them. Arkansas, it was – I thought that was one of the most exciting games of the year. You know, some people will say, oh, you know, nobody's scoring. I hate it. It's kind of like the game of the century, the Alabama-LSU football game where they kicked five field goals and it was 9-6. That's kind of what it felt like. And it reminded me a lot of, you know, one of the last times that I was down in Central Texas for baseball in Waco in 2012 at the Super Regional. Game three that year was scoreless going to the 10th. And then Arkansas wins 1-0 in game three to go to Omaha. And that game, you're hanging on every single pitch because it's such a big game. And it can turn at any point. And it was a little bit different the other night with A&M winning it on a bases-loaded walk. But Hagen Smith and Ryan Prager pitched phenomenally. Gabe Gackle pitched really well. Evan Aschenbach pitched great. And, you know, the thing I think that a lot of people probably don't realize is that Evan Aschenbach is the best relief pitcher in college baseball this year. And, you know, Arkansas had a chance to get a sac fly in the, I think it was the top of the 11th inning with one out. And Aschenbach works around it. And, you know, people are like, well, you know, they failed. Well, yeah, they probably did. But good pitchers know how to get out of those situations. Right. And I said this is that it would be kind of like expecting a sac fly against Kevin Copps in 2021.
Yeah.
You don't expect that against that type of great relief pitcher. Aschenbach, the All-SEC teams came out yesterday, and he's first-team All-Relief pitcher. And he could very well win the Sophomore of the Year award this year.
He was good, and a lot of people asked me, would you have bunted in that situation? And, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you got your best hitter at the plate.
Stovall, the at-bat before against Aschenbach, hit it 101 off the bat, 390 feet to center field.
Yeah.
That's your best hitter. If you could pick anybody to come up right now in a sac fly situation, I think Stovall, because of the way he's making contact, would be as ideal of a hitter as Arkansas would have.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said normally in that situation, you're going to try to do a safety squeeze. You're going to try to get that run in. Runners at first and third. With Stovall up, I say let him hit. You know, I mean, I didn't look at the splits with Aschenbach. I don't think it really matters when it comes to Stovall. He's good enough that it doesn't matter. So I say let him hit right there. Dude made a couple good pitches on him, and sometimes you got to tip your hat to the pitcher. Not very often, but sometimes you got to.
You know, lost track of thought a second ago. What I was going to say was that game one and two, they had that north wind coming in, and then game three, the south wind was back, and the ball was really jumping. It was like a launching pad especially early there in game three. But Stovall on that ball that he hit in the eighth or ninth inning against Ashenbeck, that's a home run in College Station almost any other night. And there were two or three of those swings, some by both teams, during game one, where I was sitting with Ryan Broninger, who took that video there, and you know, he said, you know, that's a home run here,
right?
This time of year, almost every other game. And so the park played a lot differently than I think it plays this time of year.
Yeah, I think Hudson White hit one too. I think McGlaughlin. We had a few balls hard that were caught at the fence that normally they're home runs there.
So Arkansas loses, you know, 1-0 in game one, just a very well pitched game. They come back in game two. They've still got the chance to win the SEC West, and they do. They win 6-3, and I was really impressed. Number one, with the way that could have gone sideways on Gage Wood really quickly. He gives up a 2-run home run in the first inning against one of their best hitters, Braden Montgomery. But he was able to, you know, he's able to get through it.
Right.
And he had runners on base the whole night. Wasn't a byproduct of walks. It was, I think, 7 hits against him in 5 innings. But he gets through, you know, those situations. Arkansas, they come back. They get a couple of quick runs, tie the game. A&M goes back up again. Arkansas ties it in the sixth. And then the big 3-run homer by Hudson White that ultimately won them the division.
Well, if you go back to Gage, I mean, you think about that first inning. You know, error by Stovall on a routine play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a play that he makes 100 out of 100 times. I mean, he's just the routine play. And then next guy hits a home run. That says a lot about Gage right there, because you think about it, Matt. To me, that's the biggest game of the year right there. I mean, I feel like we had to win that game to win the West. I don't feel like with the pitching matchups, I don't think we'd have won on Saturday.
You don't want to go into that Saturday game either in like a must-win situation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because then the collar gets a lot tighter.
Yeah, so I figured I approached Friday as a must-win for us, and I thought Gage did a great job. You know, it would have been tough for him. I mean, it would have been – I think the old Gage might not have battled through that. You know, an error and then a home run, you're down 2-0. You know, in the first inning. But, boy, he bowed up after that and pitched his butt off, did a great job. And so, you know, he looked good. And that really is a tough lineup.
And then Hudson White, I mean, he is just on fire right now.
Yeah.
This is the Hudson White that they expected to get when they said that he was their best hitter in the fall.
Well, he's not missing pitches. That's the thing. You know, we talk about good hitting is good timing. I mean, he's on everything. Even when – like the pitch he hit out was a 3-2 slider, and that was hanging right over the middle of the plate. But good hitters don't miss that. You know, guys that are scuffling foul that ball off. They hook it foul, they pop it up, something. But, I mean, he's hammering balls right now, and that's what you got to do. And we need a few more guys to get hot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was looking at some stats, and we can go over it another time, but just comparing like the 21, 22, and 24 teams, you know, batting averages and runs scored and runs allowed, and they're pretty close. If you really – everyone thinks that we're really struggling this year. I mean, we're hitting 269 as a team. In 2021, we were 50-13. We hit 267 as a team. So, I mean, we're not, you know, we're really not far off. Now, the thing is, we hit a few more home runs that year. We scored 7.6 runs a game. This year, we're scoring 6.6. Then we allowed 4 runs a game. Now we're allowing 3.7 runs a game. So they're both comparable. I mean, they're right there, you know. So, I mean, I say all the time, it's not what you hit, it's when you hit.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to get those timely hits. And, you know, I agree. I think you flush. I don't even count Saturday. I just let it go. That didn't, you know, we were done. We were ready to get the Hoover.
What about Ty Wilmsmeyer? Because if you look at batting average, he was their best hitter in College Station.
Yeah. Hey, I thought, look, okay, so we're wanting to go to Omaha. That's the ultimate goal for this team, is to end up in Omaha. You want him to be your center fielder in Omaha. That's a huge ballpark. Yeah. It's huge to have him in there. I think Omaha plays to our strengths. I think it really does. I like the fact we're coming back here to Baum Walker for regional and super regional. But if we can get him going and get him on base, he's such a threat on base. You saw what he did with the stolen base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gets picked off. He still beats the throw to second. They rush their throw and they threw it away. He laid down a really good bunt down the first baseline, a push bunt. And that's something you don't see a whole lot. And it's such a great play because the first baseman and pitcher, they have to decide who's going to get that ball. Mm-hmm. You know, when you get second baseman a lot of time playing deep in the shift, second baseman can't get there, so first baseman pitcher have to figure it out. And I just think it's a great weapon for Ty if he can do that. I was impressed.
Aloy had a big weekend, a couple of big home runs. I think they were both two-out home runs, and I know one was at least with two strikes, and I think both of them might have been with two strikes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they were. One was an 0-2 pitch that I think it was a changeup away, and he went out. He kind of hooked it a little bit, but hooked it to the left field seats. I don't know. I think he takes some crazy swings early in the count.
He sure does.
But another thing I say all the time, and Phil gets tired of hearing it, I'll probably, a swinging bat's a dangerous bat. I mean, you got to go up there and early in the count, be aggressive. Get mm-hmm. your pitch and take a swing, take a hack at it. You never know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Swing hard in case you hit it, right? Well, he definitely swings hard, but he's got the ability with two strikes to rein that in a little bit. He doesn't really lessen his swing. He just narrows in his attack, mm-hmm. and he's been good.
He keeps the team chiropractor in business. Oh my goodness. I can only imagine how that it's a violent swing.
It really is.
It is as violent a swing as I can remember any Arkansas player.
I think the only other Brady Slavens.
He took some big ones.
He took some big
ones. Spanberger
swings.
Took some real big ones.
Yeah, you know what? Spanberger was always under control though, wasn't okay. he? Yeah. I don't know that I mean
especially his last year. His first year there was some learning, I think.
I think with Aloy, you watch him swing sometimes. Like, he'll swing at a first pitch, and he'll miss it by 5 feet. And I'll be like, ooh, that doesn't look good. Yeah. But then he'll come back, you know, with an 0-2 count, hit one 440 feet. So, mm-hmm. I mean, hey, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right?
He's 13 home runs, 54 RBI for him. Those are both team leads. I thought one of the biggest developments out of the weekend was Mason Molina and the way that he pitched. In the second game, he comes in a really tough situation, by the way. Big crowd, loud crowd, and he's facing the top of the A&M lineup. And just so you know, the top of the A&M lineup is Gavin Grahovac, who was just named SEC Freshman of the Year, 19 home runs. Jace Lavalette, who is All-SEC outfielder, 28 home runs. Braden Montgomery, All-SEC outfielder, 26 home runs. He inherits a runner. It's a tie game. I mean, it felt like that game could get away from Arkansas. And I thought the two big at-bats for him were the Lavalette at-bat, where it goes 3-2, Lavalette fouls off a pitch, and then he gets to pop up, I think, to second base. And then he starts off the ninth inning by throwing three straight balls against their seven-hole hitter, and he comes back and makes two really good pitches before getting him out. And you know, 9-up and 9-down for Mason Molina. It can't go much better than that.
Yeah, and – so when you watch him pitch, I don't know if you could tell there in person, but I was watching on TV. He pitched with a different energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had some fire in him
His velocity was up by a couple miles an hour on his fastball.
I saw a few 94 on the screen. I don't know what that was.
That's what I was reading in the ballpark too.
So he hadn't thrown that hard, but he had a little fire and intensity in him. Like, he's been real, like, just, you know, even keel on the mound, but he showed some energy right there. A little fire in him, and I loved it. But, you know, one thing, you go back. So when I look at a game, I'm always looking at, okay, when's the lineup? We don't want that lineup to roll back over again. I thought the catch that Kendall Diggs made down the right field line in the eighth inning, it was the leadoff to eighth inning. Mm-hmm. That saved a double. It was right on the line, but that ball would have been fair. I think that changes a lot of things. If that ball drops – you know, then the lineup's guaranteed to roll back over again, because you don't want to see Grahovac, Lavalette in the ninth inning at home in their ballpark. No. So I thought that catch was really big that he made, just to assure that, hey, we can keep this lineup from rolling over if we get outs.
I asked Mason about the velocity afterward, and I said, you know, is this just a byproduct of – because sometimes you come in relief and you just let it rip.
Right.
Because you know you're not going to throw nearly as many pitches if you're starting. I said, you know, is it that? Is it are you just ticked off about how things are going or have gone over the last few weeks? He said it's probably just a little bit of everything. And great job by Mason Molina. I thought that was an outstanding deal. And it sets up now an interesting, I don't know if dilemma, dynamic is the right word, but is he a starter again? Or do you like what he did in relief so much that you want to keep that in the back end?
Boy, I don't know. You know, it'd be nice to have him as a starter, but he looks so good. Why not just leave him in that role and use, you know.
Maybe bring him in earlier in a game.
Yeah, let Gage Woods start a game and go a few innings, then come back with Molina after that. I mean, there's a lot of options. But I really did like the way he came in and threw the ball. That's the best I've seen him all year.
You know, the objective is to get 27 outs.
Yep.
And I almost wonder if we might see Arkansas go with like an opener type role somewhere over the next few weeks, whether – I mean, maybe the next 2 weeks, whether it's here in Hoover or sometime during the regional.
Hey, you could – it could happen, you know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I mean, you know, we talk all the time about 27 outs. That's the way Dave approaches it, mm-hmm. and that's the key, you know. When you get the outs, it doesn't matter. I mean, if Molina's starting a game and getting outs or coming in to get the last nine, I mean, it doesn't matter. I feel really confident with Molina on the mound at the end of the game, though. A veteran mm-hmm. guy, knows how to, you know, he's not fazed by the pressure. You know, if Gackle's not available, you know, he's a good guy to go to.
So Arkansas finishes the regular season 43-12, 20-10 in the SEC. I think if you ask anybody at the beginning of the year, would you take 43-12 and 20-10? They would say no doubt.
Oh, absolutely. But have you been on Twitter? I mean,
or the message boards?
Yeah. You know what? I'm not on any message boards. I can't handle the negativity. But there was a lot of negativity on Twitter. Like Sunday, you know, like Sunday morning, I'm looking at stuff, or Sunday afternoon. I don't know. There's just so much negativity. I don't know. I wish people would focus a little bit more on the positive and less on the negative. I mean, you can watch a baseball game and pick out 100 negative things, mm-hmm. or you can pick out 100 positive things. And I think they need to look at what this team has accomplished versus what they haven't accomplished. And look, 20 wins in SEC, Matt, that's crazy. That's good. Winning the SEC West, the best division in all of baseball, mm-hmm. to win that 5 out of 6 years, that's incredible. It says a lot about DVH and the staff and these players.
I think there are a lot of people who feel like the team is fading down the stretch, but I think it's a byproduct of how their schedule broke.
Oh, yeah.
Because what if you go 1-2 at Kentucky and you go 1-2 at A&M, but you play those series in April?
Yeah.
It's just they played, in my opinion, the three toughest teams that they played this year were their last three series of SEC play. And they go 4-5 in those series. Again, you take A&M, I think you throw game three out the window. And then, you know, A&M, it's that game one is really a toss-up. That thing can go either way. And there's a lot of games, you know, down the stretch that I think are like that. Even games that Arkansas won.
Yeah, we won a lot of games that were just like that game we lost in the 11th. I mean, there really were, but we came out on the positive side of it. Our record in one-run games is crazy, 1- and 2-run games. Any those close games we've been winning all year, we just didn't win that one. But if you flip it and you say, okay, we play Kentucky first series, A&M second series, we go 1-2, 1-2, but we finish with Missouri and Auburn and we sweep both of them, everyone's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
let's go. We're going to Omaha. Let's get our tickets. You know, people don't understand that a lot of it has to do with who you're playing, and those two teams are really good. The only thing that could have made those last three weekends worse, if we could have added Tennessee at the end of that and played three of them in a row, because Tennessee's really good too. And I don't know. I think people overlook the fact of who you're playing, because those teams are good offensively. They're both really good top to bottom. I was really impressed with Kentucky. They were better than I thought they were going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, they walked us. They gave us opportunities. Had a lot of runners left on base, but they're a good team. They really are. But A&M's a real deal from pitching, hitting up and down that lineup. That lineup's crazy to maneuver through.
Yeah, I think it's the best lineup I've seen in the SEC this year.
Yeah,
especially those top three. Yeah. And nobody's got three back to back to back like Grohovac and Laviolette and Montgomery.
Yeah,
I think that's tough.
I think you got to flip Montgomery. He's not as good from the right side. I think you got to keep him.
You're right.
You got to keep him on the right side of the plate.
And I would say the same thing for Jackson Appel, who's really good. Yeah. He's their cleanup hitter.
Yeah, yeah.
He's their, I mean, average-wise, he's their best hitter. By the way, I found out his grandfather played basketball for the Razorbacks in the 1960s, which I thought was just kind of a very interesting aside over the weekend. Winning the SEC West, what's the significance?
For me, I love it. I think it's huge. Now, you know, Dave said it best. I want to say Bob Holt asked him if he got, you know, a Gatorade shower or got wet after the game or something. Dave's like, no, we got a lot of work to do, mm-hmm. Which is their approach. I mean, with this team, I think we judge. I mean, Dave's created a monster. It's Omaha or bust with the players, the coaches, and the fans. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's a huge accomplishment. Like I said, 20 wins in SEC, we win the West. That's big. But this team, that's not their goal. Their goal is to win Omaha and win that last game of the year. And so until that happens, we're not satisfied.
We got a lot more to go. We're going to talk about the SEC tournament. We don't know who Arkansas is going to play as we sit here right now. We'll know that later today. So if you're listening to delay, you'll know that too. But we got a lot more to go. First word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
All right, welcome back into the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Arkansas is at the SEC tournament. Their first game is going to be Wednesday. The weather is actually going to be fine in Hoover this week. It looks like it's going to be dry and hot all weekend. You know, usually you're at the SEC tournament, and it's like, okay, you know, how many delays are we going to go through? You know, if your game is scheduled for one time, it'll probably start about, I don't know, 2 days later. That's typically how it goes down there. But if everything goes according to plan, it'll be about, you know, somewhere in the 12:30, 1 o'clock range is when they'll play on Wednesday, pardon me, against the winner of either Alabama or South Carolina.
Who would you rather play? I know who I'd rather play.
Well, what are your thoughts?
I've always thought Alabama for some reason plays us really good. I think they got a good lineup. Mm. You know, they got who is it leading off? Gage Miller. The guy's hitting 380 something. I mean, just a tough out. You can't get that guy out. They're hitting over 300 as a team. You know, I'd rather see South Carolina. I think it's a better matchup for us. Now, I know when we won the Friday night game against Alabama. Hess threw, Ben Hess. Mm-hmm. He won't be ready to throw again, so we wouldn't see him. But the other two guys are the ones that beat us. Who was the lefty that came in and shut us out?
Oh, the freshman,
Zane. Was it Zane?
I think you're right. I'm going to be up here.
Well, whoever was, I mean, dominated us. I think that's the best game he probably threw all year. But I'd rather play South Carolina.
Zane Adams.
I'd rather play South Carolina, and I think we match up better against them.
That's interesting because I think their lineup is really good.
Yeah, we got them though. I think we'll score. I think we'll score against both of them. I really do.
It's interesting because both of those teams come into the tournament and they're scuffling a little bit. Alabama lost to Auburn over the weekend, and South Carolina got swept by Tennessee. I think it was the second consecutive week that South Carolina lost a series.
Doesn't it seem that Alabama plays us tough, though?
There's something about it.
They always seem to play us tough. I don't know.
There are certain teams that match up well with other teams, and it's not just baseball. I feel like there's football matchups like that, like Arkansas, Texas A&M football.
Yeah,
there's probably no reason Arkansas to play A&M as close as they do every single year.
Right,
but that game you can always almost, you know, it's almost like clockwork. It's going to come down to the, you know, the last possession or sometime in overtime. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's like some pitchers match up well with some hitters. And vice versa. I mean, some hitters rake certain pitchers. I know there were guys, you know, that I faced throughout my career that ended up going on to the big leagues and having good careers that I owned. Other guys couldn't hit them.
Yeah.
I raked them. And then on the flip side of it, there were guys that sucked that I couldn't hit. Everyone else raked. And, you know, they're working at McDonald's now. I never got a hit against them. So it's just crazy how that works. But there just seems something about Alabama. They play well against us. I don't know what it is.
I think Blake's got the SEC tournament bracket pulled up. There it is. You can kind of see a breakdown. So right now, as we're talking right now, Georgia and LSU are playing in the first game in Hoover. The winner of that will play against Kentucky tomorrow in the first game. And then you see Alabama and South Carolina in game two. The winner will play Arkansas tomorrow. So the way this works is that Arkansas through Friday would not play any teams outside of those six that we – or those other five that we just mentioned, Alabama, South Carolina, LSU, Georgia, and Kentucky. By the way, you see where this could set up on Thursday,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah.
It could be Hagen against Condon.
I'd love to see that.
I think we would all love to see that.
Yeah, I'd like to see that matchup. We got to see Hagen, you know, against Florida. So, yep. I mean, Caglione, we got to see that matchup. You know, you can say Hagen won it. Caglione didn't get a hit, but he hit a ball 115 to second base and another one 99 line drive to center.
Good
yeah. So he hit a couple balls hard, but I mean, hey, you know, scoreboard doesn't lie. He didn't get any hits off of Hagen.
I mean, I've been keeping up with this and I don't have the tally right in front of me, but Hagen's numbers this year against what I think are top prospects, it begins with Bazana in Arlington, strikes him out three times. He got Caglione out three times. I thought he held his own against Montgomery and Lavalette the other day. Montgomery, I think, struck out three times against him. Lavalette struck out once. He was 1-for-3. He did have a double right as Hagen was nearing, you know, the end of the gas tank. He's been phenomenal against these guys. And so, yeah, I think, especially because I think Condon and Hagen are the two that are going for the Golden Spikes Award.
Right.
To me, those two have separated themselves from everybody else. So even if it's just one at bat in a big ballpark like Hoover, I still would love to see Condon against Hagen.
Yeah, I got my money on Hagen. You know, and I thought he took care of Lavalette. Lavalette hit the ball to right field, but it was a 3-1 fastball, and Hagen's just like, here it is, hit it. You know, best against best, threw him a 3-1 fastball, and he hit it hard to right field. Yeah. Other than that, I mean, you look at what he did against that lineup, 14 strikeouts. I know we've already talked about it, but I mean, our pitcher struck out 20
in six
that
innings.
Game. We struck out 20 A&M hitters. You know how hard that is to do?
Oh,
that doesn't happen.
Incredibly hard.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting is that coming into this year, the school record for strikeouts in a game was 18.
Yeah.
And it had been done, I think, six times. They've eclipsed 18 strikeouts now, I think, six times this year. And I think the other night was their fifth with at least 20 strikeouts. It's incredible.
These numbers. Yeah, it is. It's incredible.
Hey, Blake, pull up this picture. Bubba, what do you think about the double first base that we're going to see this week in Hoover? And explain why they're doing this, because it's a safety deal. They're trying to cut down on collisions at first base and lower body injuries like we saw with Brady Slavens down there a few years ago.
Well, and that was going to be my comment to that. The old me would said, okay, next thing you know, we're going to be playing in skirts. But, you know, you see that, and I always go back to Brady Slavens. I've mentioned him a few times this year when he twisted his ankle on first base. Maybe it's a good thing. I don't know. I think the way the whole baseline going down when you're, you know, the whole obstruction call where you're inside the baseline, you know, it's just weird the way the whole line is set up. So, you know, I guess it's a good thing.
So this is a deal where the first baseman can be he can have his foot on the normal bag, but the base runner, if he hits that green bag, he's safe.
Right.
Is that straddling the fair line, right?
Yeah, I would assume the fair line's I just called it a fair line. Phil's going to love that. The foul line is, I would assume, is going to go right down the same place it always does. Green base is going to be on the outside of that. They do it in, like, kid pitch or coach pitch for younger kids to avoid collisions at home at first base. So, you know, maybe it's a good thing, Matt. I'm old school. I'm a creature of habit. I have a hard time with that. I understand the reasoning behind it, but I mean, what's next, man? What are we gonna do next?
I didn't mean to trip you up on the fair line. You know, actually, I call it foul line too. Foul line. I don't know why I said foul. And as I said it, I was like, that does not sound right. And then you said it, I was like, well, maybe I am.
I just hope Phil isn't watching anywhere. I know he's in Hoover right now. Hopefully, he's eating breakfast or something. I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see how that works down there. We're going to talk here about all SEC. We'll start with Hagen Smith. He's the SEC Pitcher of the Year Big surprise there, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was that was an easy one. That's one of the easiest ones there's probably ever had to pick.
I mean, I wrote something yesterday. I went back and looked at just some of the comments that SEC coaches had made about Hagen throughout the season. Here, let me pull a few of these up. I thought these were great. This was Jay Johnson on March 28th from LSU. He's one of the best pitchers I've ever faced in my entire career. You go to April 20th, Mark Kingston. He could go pitch against the Boston Red Sox right now and have success. Chris Lemonis, I don't know if there's a better pitcher out there than that. If there is, holy cow. And then Schlossnagel the other night, I mean, he just kept going on and on about how much he loved watching Hagen Smith. Said he's the best left-handed starter that he's seen in 35 years of coaching. And he made an interesting comment. You know, Brandon Finnegan pitched for him at TCU, and he's the only player who ever pitched in the College World Series and the Major League World Series in the same calendar year. And Schlossnagel said, I coached Brandon Finnegan. Hagen Smith could be pitching somewhere in October. If you have a draft pick and you're in contention, how do you not go get him in your bullpen for the postseason?
I mean, it's a good point. They said the same about Skeens last year, though. Yeah. I mean, he could have left, you know, gone straight from Omaha to, you know, to the Pirates and pitching the big leagues. I think part of it's the workload. But, you know, here's what I love about Hagen. He's so humble. When they interviewed him during the – you wouldn't have seen it because you were there. Mm-hmm. I was watching on TV, and they interviewed Hagen on I believe it was Saturday. And they were asking him about, you know, him versus Paul Skeens. And he's like, no, Paul Skeens is a dude. You know, he's unbelievable and all that. And they pulled up Hagen's numbers. Hagen's numbers are better at this point of the year.
Especially in SEC play.
Yeah. I mean, they're better. And, I mean, every category, when they pulled it up, and I think they were going just on SEC play, every category, his numbers are better than Paul Skeens. And I agree. I think you could draft him right now, and you could put him – out there against major league hitters, he's going to get outs. I mean, the guy, he's got 3+ pitches, but not only that, he just knows how to pitch. I mean, he's just mound presence, just his demeanor on the mound. He's not fazed by anything. Yeah, I agree. I think he'd go right now and get outs in the big leagues.
Something that I thought of the other day. Have you kept up with how well he's pitched away from home? Just kind of go back through your mind right now and think about all of the games that he's pitched away. And I would put Oregon State in that category, even though that felt kind of like a home game. It felt a lot like a home game because there were so many Arkansas fans at Globe Life. But he pitched there. He pitched at Auburn, pitched at Alabama, pitched at South Carolina, pitched at Kentucky, and pitched at A&M. There's not a bad start in there.
Yeah, you know what? I guess I haven't looked at it that way, but you're right. I mean, he hasn't. The only start that he started that we didn't win was A&M.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean,
That's not his fault.
We had chances to win that. You know, I still go back, and it doesn't really at this point of the season make a big deal. I still go back to that very first start. I wish we could take that James Madison start out, that one inning where he gave up the 3 runs, the jam shot, I want to say it was a slider up and in. A guy just kind of fisted it out the center, and the wind was blowing out like crazy. I wish we could take that out. And I haven't done the stats to see what that would do to his numbers. But
probably wouldn't change it a whole lot, but
yeah,
it'd make it a little bit better.
But it's just I look at that start, and I'm like, that shouldn't even count. We ought to get a mulligan there. It was 30 degrees. It may not have even been 30 degrees. It felt like 10
25,
degrees.
Yeah, it was rough. So in his road starts, I've got it written down here, though, 36 innings. He's actually pitched 6 innings in every start away from home, an even 6 every start. 2 runs, 15 hits, 13 walks, 74 strikeouts in 36 innings away from Baumwalker Stadium. And that, you know, that comes out to a .78 whip and a .50 ERA in road games.
Man, that's some good work right there. I like good penmanship, too. You write way better than me and Phil, that's for sure. I can't read what Phil's writing. That's pretty impressive.
We're getting into this stuff over here. That's a lot of work. Total nerdcast stuff that I do want to get into.
Hey, but I will say, on those 6 innings, he could have gone 7.
And
I love how
go ahead.
I was going to say, I love how Dave and Hobbs have managed him this year. You know, in the past, you look at like Blaine Knight, you look at Isaiah Campbell, you look at Connor Nolan.
Mm-hmm.
There were multiple times. Of course, they're different. I mean, they're not really – like, I look at Isaiah Campbell. He's got a smooth delivery. It's different when you let him go over 100 pitches. Hagen's a little bit more of a violent delivery. I mean, there's a lot of energy in every pitch he throws, but they've really done a great job of managing his pitches and not getting his pitch count up early in the year. That's why we're in, you know, we're getting into close to June, and I feel like he's getting better, and that's what you love to see out of your ace.
That also came out too. I had that written down here. 18 and a half strikeouts per nine innings. That's unbelievable.
That's
unbelievable numbers that he's putting up away from home. All right, more
against the best hitters in the country.
Yeah, I mean, South Carolina, I think they've got an outstanding lineup. Yeah. You know, because you're talking about you'd rather see them than Alabama, but I sit here and I think they've got Cole Messina, they've got Gavin Cassis, they've got Ethan Petry. Until I saw A&M in person, I thought South Carolina may have the best three-headed hitting monster in the league. And then you see Grijalvac and Montgomery and Laviolette, and that's better than what South Carolina has. But South Carolina, it's still very capable. Yeah, I mean, all these – Bazana, I mean, Oregon State, look at what they've done since they played Arkansas.
Yeah.
It's incredible what he's done to good teams away from home. And I think that tells you a lot about his just competitiveness. Because a lot of guys can do it on their home mound, but taking it on the road is a totally different animal.
Right. You see guys do that when they come into Baum Walker. You know, they dominate, and then they come into Baum Walker, and they don't do it.
Yeah, look at Luke Holman.
Yeah.
But I will say Cal Stephan, he did a great job at Arkansas. And you see, he got first-team All-SEC alongside Hagen as a starting pitcher. Because we talked last week, like, who do you put as the other, you know, first-team All-SEC pitcher? Is it Stephan? Is it Holman? Is it Prager? That's a tough vote, but Stephan ended up getting it.
Who would you have given it to? I mean, the way watching Prager pitch.
Boy, I don't know. I think I would have gone with Stephan. I think that's who I said last week, and I think I would stick with that. I think I was just a little bit more – if I'm basing it just on how they pitched against Arkansas, I was a little bit more impressed with Stephan because he did it in Baum.
Right. Yeah, good point.
All right. Blake's got other All-SEC picks here for Arkansas. They got seven of them, by the way. Hagen was obviously on the first team. He was the Razorbacks' only all-first team starter. Hagen's Blake's pulling that up right now. We'll get to that here in just a second. Oh, here we go. Go ahead and pull that up, Blake. We got Jared Sprigelot on the All-SEC defensive team at third base. I think this was kind of a no-brainer.
Right. That's an easy one there. Jared's done a great job all year. You know, it's so hard from year to year because, like, last year, you know, we had Caleb Cowley, and we're comparing him to Caden Wallace, which just isn't a fair comparison. You know, because you look at Caden Wallace, Battles, Robert Moore, you know, you look at those two guys, you're like, wow, we're never going to have that. But then you look at what we've done this year. I mean, Jared Sprigelot's been great at third base. Aloy's been really consistent at shortstop. Made an error over the weekend, but he's been really good. And then you know, Stovall, she's been great at second.
Next up, you got Nolan Souza, All-SEC freshman team. I was a little surprised by this one just because he hasn't had – he hadn't had a whole lot of playing time, but he hasn't had as much playing time as probably some of the others in the league.
Yeah, but I think people, and I know you're not supposed to project on these.
He's toolsy, right?
Yeah, I think it's his whole, everything about him, you just look at him, you're like, this is a dude. I'm telling you, in 2 years, scouts are going to be foaming at the mouth over that dude. I love watching him play. He's athletic. He's strong. Bat speed. Can field, can throw, can run. I mean, he's got all the tools.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna be fun to watch get better.
Next up, we got kind of the heart and soul of the team. I feel like Peyton Stovall, all SEC second base, second team.
Okay, I'm glad he won something.
I was a little surprised he wasn't on the all defensive team, but we talked about it last week. Petry is really good too at Kentucky, and that's who got that on the defensive team.
You think he should have been first,
Peyton?
Yeah.
Over Christian Moore? No.
No.
We talked about it last week. I think Christian Moore was – he's got big-time offensive numbers.
Yeah.
If you're talking about the total package, I could listen to your argument about Peyton Stovall over Moore for sure, because I think Peyton's so good defensively. But Moore had an outstanding season for Tennessee.
Yeah, I guess I got goggles on. I want him to be first team, but I get it. Christian Moore's had a good year.
Yeah, I mean, but really cool deal there for Peyton, especially coming off the foot injury at the beginning of the season, and people forget about the shoulder surgery that he had last year that kept him out of the fall. This one, I think maybe a little bit of a surprise, Peyton Holt on the all-defensive team. I think one play sure helped him get this. Yeah. It wasn't just one play, though. He's made a couple of really nice, I should even say more than a couple. He's made a lot of really nice plays in the outfield.
You know, he's the one that I'm really glad got something because he's a guy that, he's so valuable to this team. And some of the catches he made in the outfield, we all love the glove pump, but look at some of the catches he's made going back against the wall, the diving catch he made.
Mississippi State.
I mean, that was crazy. It was awesome. You know, made a diving catch over the weekend coming in. I mean, he's good, and he's everywhere. You could put him anywhere on the field, and he's going to make plays for you.
Think about the irony of Peyton Holt and Jared Sprigelot both being on the All-SEC defensive team, because the conversation in the preseason was which one plays better defense. That's going to be the one that gets to play at third base. None of us could have foreseen that Peyton Holt would have a year where he becomes All-SEC defensive in the outfield. Gabe Gackle is on the All-SEC freshman team. This was pretty easy. I mean, this is a freshman All-American, maybe even an All-American. Take the freshman word out of it.
Right.
The job that he's done this year. The number that I keep coming back to with Gackle is, you know, his whip is great, his ERA is great. All these numbers are great. It's the fact that he's inherited 20 base runners and he's gotten only one out of those 20 have scored.
Yeah. He's been incredible. I mean, for a freshman, and you say, you know, well, he's a freshman. At this point in the year, he's really not a freshman anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, they've kind of been through the gauntlet, but still what he's been able to do has been incredible. And he's another one I'm super excited about because we get to see him probably, I would think, Friday night starter next year.
Unless they go in the portal and they get just some Paul Skeens type out of the portal.
Yeah.
He's got to be the favorite, I would think, to be in the rotation next year at the front.
Yeah, I think so.
And then one more All-SEC to talk about with that pulled up.
Who was the last one?
Vahiva. We'll go ahead and talk about Vahiva Aloy as Blake pulls up that card. I didn't really help him by sending them to him kind of out of order. Vahiva Aloy.
I wasn't going to say anything.
13 home runs, 54 RBI. I think he's been, as advertised offensively, the thing that impresses me about him is that, you know, his fielding at Sacramento State was not very good. And they have really brought him, and this is a credit to him, but they've brought him a long way as a fielder this year. And I'm really interested to see how that continues to progress into his junior year.
Right. Well, you know, he makes, like, he's probably not going to make a lot of your spectacular, you know, plays like your Jalen Battle.
Yeah, a heck
type
of a play
plays.
Though in game one at A&M, saved a run in the eighth inning.
Yeah, he did. But he makes your routine play. I shouldn't say. I guess I shouldn't say. That's not fair. I mean, he's made a lot of great plays. Where was he made the play to save the game in the ninth inning?
Alabama.
That's right. Great backhand play. Game on the line. Winning run at third base. I mean, he's made some clutch plays that you got to have in the SEC to win. And so, you know, and then we know how he swings it. I mean, it's, you know, at times he gets a little out of control early in the count, but he figures out a way to get it done. I think he got off to a really bad start, kind of like your Caleb Cowley start last year where he was trying to do a little too much. I think he's done a great job of kind of reining in a little bit. And he's a force at the plate. You can tell, Matt, when he steps up to the plate, pitchers pitch him different. That's an uncomfortable at bat for pitchers because they know their margin for error. If they make a mistake, he's going to hit something hard.
I love Van Horn's story about when they recruited him. You know, one of the things Van Horn asked him is like, "Are you going to let me coach you? Are you going to let me coach you defensively?" And he said, "Yes."
Yeah.
You know, and that's all they needed to hear.
Yeah.
And he's, I think, we didn't watch him against Sacramento State. We're just going on numbers. But I think that if you were to pull up the tape from Sacramento State just based on the numbers and you look at what he's done defensively this year, it would be a night and day difference.
Right. No, it's been incredible. Now, you think part of that is the playing surfaces a little bit better that he's playing on now. So he's getting
a little bit,
you know. I mean you now he's better, don't get me wrong. I think DVH does a great job developing middle infielders. I mean, you go out there early when they do their early work, their ground balls before BP. DVH is right out there in the middle of it. It's not, he's not sitting in the dugout in the shade. He's out there with the players, and I think that's awesome.
I think that element of Van Horn's coaching gets overlooked a little bit is the work, the hands-on work that he does with the middle infielders. Yeah. I mean, how long has it been since Arkansas had a middle infield that was not one of the best in the SEC?
Oh, I can't even remember. We're always good. And
yeah, I mean, they're always very – and I'll tell you what I think really helped them was the Fowler Center.
Yeah.
When they were able to go in and work on this stuff when it was cold and nasty outside.
Yeah, I think so.
And you look at when the Fowler Center opened, look at their fielding percentage beginning. You can draw like a straight line years before the Fowler Center and years after the Fowler Center. And I think the Fowler Center, it not only does it help them in that regard, but it helped them in recruiting too. They were able to recruit to that facility, say, hey, we're going to have this on campus that you're going to be able to work out in. But, Van Horn's coaching with the middle infield, I think, is overlooked. And I want to talk about Van Horn because I wrote something about this yesterday. I think that one of the secrets to their postseason success, and I'm talking about regionals, not Hoover, is how he approaches this week. And it begins with Saturday against A&M, where going back to you lose some to win some, he just doesn't put a lot of pressure. It doesn't mean that there's not expectations to win, but there's not just this overbearing expectation to win in Hoover. It's let's go out there, let's get some guys some playing experience. I think we're going to see that throughout the week. You know, you're going to see guys, you know, they may get pulled off the field 6th, 7th inning to get somebody else in there. You're going to see pitchers get a lot of innings because there's no need to overwork a Hagen Smith or a Gabe Gackel or those pitchers. I just feel like he does a great job of having a pulse of the team this time of year, seeing who needs rest, who needs playing time. And then I also, you know, they always end the year on the road, the regular season on the road, or almost every year they do. And we talked about that last week about how that's because of final schedules. But they're gone for 8, 9, 10 days, 11 days maybe. They go straight to Hoover, and not everybody does this. Like A&M, they went to Hoover, I think, on Monday, 2 days after Arkansas gets there. So that's two fewer nights that A&M will spend in Hoover, assuming they're there at the same, you know, they're there for the same amount of time. That's a big bonding experience for this team. They give them time off.
Yeah.
Players go out, they go shop, they go bowling, they go watch movies, they go to arcades, whatever it is that they want to do. I don't know. I feel like there's something about this week that marinates really well into the postseason success.
No, I think so. I think a big part of it, Matt, is just clearing the mechanism. You get away. You take a day where you don't do anything. You walk around the mall, see a movie, go do whatever you want to do, and just forget about the game for a day and just kind of clear this thing.
Mm-hmm.
They just went through 10 weeks of SEC play.
And you can see it on their faces,
too.
Oh,
my gosh.
I mean, like when you're sitting there talking to them, you can tell how this grind of, you know, 10 weeks of SEC play and it's 14 weeks of the regular season, but really you got to go back 3 more weeks because of the, you know, the preseason work they do. It's a ton of, you know, time on your feet that takes its toll on the body this time of year.
Well, and I think SEC play just beats you down because you're not playing. You know, it's not like a weekend where we started out with Missouri. I mean, they weren't very good. Ole Miss was okay. They're way down this year, but they're still Ole Miss. But there's not like a weekend where you can just relax and say, oh, okay, we get some slappy this weekend. You know, it's not like in the middle of the football season where you schedule that win that you can get somewhere. I don't know. It's hard. It's such a grind. So I think it's good for them to get away, kind of clear the mechanism, and then take a few days to relax versus coming back here. You know, as a player, I'll tell you, as a player, Matt, the games didn't make me tired. What tired me was the travel. The travel's what wears you out. So instead of coming back to Fayetteville for a couple of days, then packing up and going back to Hoover, they just go to Hoover and chill.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's awesome. And I love the fact that they do that. And I really do. I think it helps the team. I really do. Kind of re-energizes them.
You want to talk about regional projections here real quick? Because by the time we do another podcast, we'll know who's going to be in Fayetteville for the regional. The announcement's going to be made Monday on Memorial Day. The way this plays out, by the way, is Sunday night you're going to find out who the 16 regional sites are. We know Arkansas is going to be one of those, no doubt about it. Razorback's going to be a top 8 seed. About 30 minutes to an hour before the selection show on Monday morning, You'll find out who the top four seeds are in the tournament. Arkansas might be in the top four. They might be five or six. We'll find out. And then, you know, they get the selections, I think, at 11 a.m. on Monday, Memorial Day. But here's what the projections look like right now. If you listen to D1 Baseball, they've got Arkansas as the number five national seed. They've got Texas coming in here as the two, Troy coming in as the three, and St. Louis coming in as the four. Now, I think those last two are going to be, maybe not Troy because they've had a pretty good regular season, but St. Louis for sure, it's going to be dependent on if they win their, you know, this is based on how these teams did during the regular season. And my big gripe every year when the postseason comes around is I hate it for these teams that are from one bid leagues who dominate. Arkansas Little Rock is a perfect example of this, by the way.
Right.
They have dominated the Ohio Valley all year. They have to be perfect this weekend. They got to win every game, or they don't get to go to the NCAA tournament. I hate it for those teams like that. Yeah. It's not right that the automatic qualifier goes to the team that's best for 3 weeks versus or 3 days versus the team that's best for 10 weeks.
No, I agree. I think that's wrong. And there's some things that need to be fixed, I think. But, yeah, I agree with that. That needs to be fixed.
Baseball America's projection, they've got Arkansas as the number five national seed. They've got Louisiana Tech coming in here as the two seed. Kansas State is the three, and Nebraska Omaha is the four.
I don't know. I mean, you went through your percentages. And it's pretty impressive how accurate they are.
Yeah, so, I mean, Baseball America, I looked at this over 3 years. Baseball America, they get, and I – what I did was I looked at, you know, how many at-large teams do they get right, how many national seeds do they get right. So, like, for instance, Arkansas, the five in both of these, did they get those right? I tracked that. And then how many teams do they get right at the sites? And you go over 3 years, Baseball America is about 59%. D1 Baseball is about 56% accuracy. What's interesting is neither of them have been terribly accurate when it comes to Arkansas.
Yeah.
When it comes to Fayetteville. And I think part of it is because – there's just not a lot of other schools in this area, and it I feel like it kind of becomes a default place when we don't know what to do with the teams from the Northeast, or we don't know right. what to do with the teams from the West Coast. You know, there's years where it looks like a true regional. 17 looked like a true regional. You had Missouri State and ORU and Oklahoma State.
Right.
And then you had a lot of years here recently where 2019 you had Cal and Central Connecticut State, and 21 you had Northeastern and New Jersey Tech. And last year you had Santa Clara and Arizona. So yeah. I don't ever know what to feel like they're going to do with Fayetteville.
Yeah, I have no idea. Would you love to see Texas come here? I would love to see.
I know the A&M fans are scared to death that Texas is going to come in and crash their regional. that was a lot of talk down at the ballpark the other day. I think, I mean, it certainly would it'd liven things up around here, right?
Oh, it would. Not that we need any help livening things up for a regional, but you know, I don't know. I've seen one of the other projections had Texas going to the A&M regional. I don't remember which projection that was.
Mm-hmm.
It was earlier in the week, the end of the weekend, I guess, is when. But you know, it keeps changing, so we'll see. But
and it's going to change every day leading up to it. Until we know who's won these conference tournaments, this thing is always going to be evolving because you're going to have teams that are upsets into the NCAA tournament. Where okay, they fit here. They don't. It's just don't know.
Yeah, and I think if you go back and look, you know, when Nebraska came here a few years ago, I think that was a huge. They should have hosted.
They should have hosted.
That team was really good, and I thought TCU coming here. I thought we kind of got screwed with the TCU draw.
Yeah, I would say Nebraska more than any because Arkansas was the number one overall seed that year. Yeah. I feel like you should try to protect your number one national seed, not send the freaking Big Ten champion to their ballpark. And I thought them playing Nebraska, you know, they had the long run in Hoover.
Yeah,
they played Nebraska, and you know they beat NC State like a drum in game one. But you could just kind of tell the team looked a little tired. By the time those last couple of NC State games came around, that was quite the run that they went through. By the way, Hoover, I wrote this down yesterday. The last three SEC champions, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt, did not make the College World Series. The last three national champions, who were SEC teams, went a combined 1-5 in Hoover. What does that tell you?
Well, okay, so I told you when I was driving over here, I was actually reading your article.
Yeah.
It was good stuff, by the way. And I actually screenshotted that because – I knew the records weren't good. I didn't realize it was that bad. I mean
Mississippi State got run rolled twice there in 21. Ole Miss, talking about D1 baseball and Baseball America, neither of them had Ole Miss in their brackets in 22.
You're right.
And then, you know, they're one of the last teams in, maybe the last team in. They win the national championship. LSU went 1-2 there last year, lost to Arkansas. But yeah, I mean, it's – I think there's a good point to be made that if you can get out of Hoover early, it helps you in the regional.
So in 22, how did we do in – I don't even remember. How did we do in SEC 0-2. That's right.
That's the one where Dave missed the game because of the food poisoning.
You're right.
And they lost to Florida.
And then we go on and we play
– played Oklahoma State and North Carolina in the regional and super regional.
And then went to – we played – that's when we played Ole Miss.
Yeah, we played Ole Miss in Omaha three times.
And I go back to that matchup, that last game. DeLucia was pitching against us.
Connor Nolan.
Yep. Versus Connor Nolan. Winner goes to the finals. We go to the finals. We win it all that year. That was the year I thought we had it. Mm-hmm. I think we had a bad matchup behind the plate. I think Kevin Sweeney was the home plate umpire that game. His strike zone matched up with DeLucia's pitches perfectly. And I think that was and you hate to blame it on an umpire, but I mean, it makes a huge difference who your pitcher is and who your umpire is. It's like Molina. When Molina's on the mound, if he's not getting the high strike, it's not
him.
Good.
Yeah.
Who was it that came in here? The Mississippi State guy, high spin guy, top of the zone. He was getting that fastball, at the top of the zone that day, and just bad for Razorback hitters.
Just a few more numbers here. When it comes to regionals, I think there's always going to be a Big 12 team, and I think there's not always a Big 12 team in Arkansas's regional, but there's a really good chance there's going to be a Big 12 team. They played 21 regionals since '99, not all at home. 14 of those 21 have included a Big 12 team. They've hosted 10 times, 7 times a Big 12 team's been sent to Fayetteville. So Texas would fit that.
Yeah.
Kansas State's in another projection here. So possibly 30 teams have come here for regionals. 14 were from border states. 5 were from states that bordered border states, so like a Creighton, Nebraska, Kansas State, Wichita State. And then 7 have come from the Northeast and 4 have come from the West Coast.
Wow, you did your homework,
I did.
Matt. That's good stuff. I woke up and read one of your articles this morning and came over.
You feel a little dumber for it, right?
I know. No, it was good stuff. I'm about wrecked reading it, driving over here. It's not a good idea to read and drive.
Please, no. No, don't do that. All right, so we'll find out soon what Arkansas's postseason is going to look like. Like we said, they'll play in Hoover at least twice. They'll play Wednesday, and then they'll play Thursday's matchup's really hard to handicap. It's just going to depend on how games go today and how games go tomorrow, and then we'll know who Arkansas is going to play on Thursday. That's where we expect that we'll see Hagan Smith pitch is Thursday, and probably not for very long. Might see Brady Tigert in a starting role down in Hoover. It wouldn't surprise me if he pitches Wednesday. We'll find that out a little bit later today, what Arkansas's pitching plans are going to be at the SEC tournament. Like we said, on Monday, Memorial Day, we're going to have everything you need to know about the Razorbacks regional in Fayetteville. Hope you'll come to WholeHogSports.com throughout the week. You can listen to Bubba on the Razorback Sports Network. He's getting ready to head down to Hoover to call the games with Phil Elson. We appreciate you being with us, and we'll see you next Wednesday at our normal time on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
Thanks to Kendall King, where their design talents are showcased by teamwork. Kendall King, Shop Cart, and Soapbox. They're your design professionals with home run stats.